Chapter 9, The Evidence of Logic and Odds.
Organizations representing Australia's science researchers, academics and teachers last week took united aim at intelligent design. They include the State Science Teachers Association President Peter Turnbull, who said the group had grave concerns the theory was being presented as a valid alternative to evolution.
"It's not science," the group argues. "It's more like spoon bending and astrology.
This is a new phase of a war between so-called creationists and evolutionists. What's different is that proponents of intelligent design are, in short, demanding creationism be accepted as a science.
Creationists have a classical argument for the existence of God.
It says the universe is so complex that it could not possibly have come about by evolution." Andrew Dutney, associate professor of theology at Flinders University, likens it to a computer virus. He says, "You don't want to import it like a computer virus that is likely to, and is probably intended to, destabilize the rest of the curriculum." Ian Plimer, University of Melbourne geology professor, goes further. "Incompetent design, as I call it, is an anti-intellectual postmodernist mechanism for snaring the ill-educated into Protestant fundamentalism. In front bars they're talking about archbishops and politicians running scared and not condemning this Christian Wahhabism the same way that moderate Muslim leaders don't condemn Islamic terrorists." One scientist concerned, Jack De Silva, says ID is not a scientific view.
"It's arguing that things happen by magic."
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I sure find it absolutely amazing how, once again, people are claiming that intelligent design is not science when all we've been doing in our study is what? Looking at scientific data. Hello. How is that not science? But not only that, you and I are being compared to what? Islamic terrorists. When all we're trying to do is get the truth out. And speaking of the truth, what else have we been seeing? Those who are suppressing the truth about God being the creator of all life, like these educators are doing, they're actually doing what? They're actually storing up the wrath of God. And how many of you would say that's probably not a good thing to do? Therefore, in order to help you and I to become the most effective witnesses we can for Jesus Christ, and help these folks out, that's right, we're going to continue in our study called, The Witness of Creation. And what we're doing is taking a look at the five different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe. And the first evidence God left behind for us showing us this amazing truth is the evidence of an intelligent creation. And so far we've seen 8 evidences of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world, and that was the evidence of the universe, the evidence of the solar system, the evidence of the human body, the evidence of the animal kingdom, the plant and bacteria kingdoms, and then in the last chapter we saw how even symbiosis and genetic similarities show evidence of God's intelligent design. And there we saw, gee whiz, anybody who's not missing a few buttons on their remote control knows that the design in symbiotic relationships and genetic similarities implies what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say that when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, great answer, you're so intelligent. But that's right, believe it or not, did you know that's not the only evidences of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world? The 9th evidence of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world is the evidence from logic. But hey, don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Isaiah 1:16-20. "Wash and make yourselves clean. Take your evil deeds out of my sight. Stop doing wrong, learn to do right. Seek justice, encourage the oppressed. Defend the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. Come now, let us reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow; though they are red as crimson, they shall be like wool. If you are willing and obedient, you will eat the best from the land, but if you resist and rebel, you will be devoured by the sword. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken."
Now folks, according to our text, one of the things God wants us to do is to not merely acknowledge our sin and wrongdoing when we're in error, but He challenges us to what? To use our own reason or logic as to why it's sin and we're wrong and in error, right? Or in other words, to use our own brains and see if what He is saying is true and figure out how we should then logically respond. And it's this passage among many others that dispels the common myth that when a person becomes a Christian, that you check your brain in at the door. How many of you have heard that? Of course. It's commonplace. And herein lies the problem with the evolutionist. Every single time in our study we've seen how evolutionists say that the evidence for intelligent design is not based on logical scientific data. Yet the whole time what have we been doing? We've been using our own logic while observing scientific data. How is that checking in your brain at the door? It's not our fault that it leads to the logical conclusion that there must be a God who designed everything. Therefore, I propose we do as God says we should do. Let's come and reason together and let's apply our own logic when it comes to evolution, and let's just see who's really the one who's checking their brain at the door.
The logic of common sense. Where did the space for the universe come from, and where did the matter to fill the space come from? If ever there were a time when there was nothing, what would we have today? Nothing. So the question is, who made the matter, and the space to put it in? Something cannot come from nothing. Where did the laws of the universe come from, like gravity, inertia, etc., and how did matter get so perfectly organized? Do we get our laws that govern our country from an accidental explosion in a book factory? Or did someone use intelligence to think of and implement them? Therefore, who made the laws that govern our universe? Where did the energy come from to do all the organizing? Does the electricity for your house just spontaneously generate itself, or do you have to pay somebody to generate it for you? When, where, why, and how did life come from non-living matter? How long would it take for a dead rock to decide to become a living cell? Answer. Never. It's dead. Dead things do nothing. How do you explain the oxygen problem? Life could not originate where there is oxygen, because it would destroy the building blocks of life, the amino acids, yet life could not survive without continual oxygen. And neither can life cannot originate without water, yet there can be no water without oxygen. What we do observe though is that oxidized iron is found in rocks existing where life is said to have originated. So how could life ever have evolved? When, where, why, and how did life learn to reproduce itself, and with what did the first cell capable of sexual reproduction reproduce with? It takes two to tango, you know. And why would any plant or animal want to reproduce more of its kind, since this would only make more mouths to feed and decrease the chances of survival? How can mutations and any so-called recombining of the genetic code create any new, improved varieties? Recombining English letters will never produce Chinese books. When, where, why, and how did single-celled plants become multicelled, and where are the two- and three-celled intermediates, and how could they survive, let alone keep producing, since by definition they do not have all the necessary features needed for survival? If evolution happened, where are the billions upon billions of transitional fossils that should be scattered all over the Earth? Not a handful of questionable transitions, but untold billions and billions across the globe. Which evolved first and how long did it work without the others? The digestive system, the food to be digested, the appetite, the ability to find and eat the food, the digestive juices, or the body's resistance to its own digestive juice, the stomach, intestines, etc. Which evolved first and how long did it work without the others? The drive to reproduce or the ability to reproduce? How did we reproduce if it took millions of years for our reproduction systems to evolve? Reproduction was necessary for survival, but how could natural selection create this? One sex had to exist before natural selection would bring another sex into existence. How did the first sex get there, and how did reproduction take place while the other sex was forming? Or are we to believe that they just both formed independently, perfectly suited for one another? It's hard enough just to find someone to marry. Which evolved first and how long did it work without the others? The lungs, the mucus lining to protect them, the throat, or the perfect mixture of gases to be breathed into the lungs? How did lungs form if lungs are necessary for our lives right from the start? Which evolved first and how long did it work without the others? The DNA or the proteins needed by DNA, which can only be produced by DNA. The DNA or RNA to carry the DNA message to cell parts. And what evidence is there that information, such as that in DNA, could ever assemble itself? What about the 4,000 books worth of coded information that are in a tiny part of each of our 100 trillion cells? If astronomers received an intelligent signal from some distant galaxy, most people would conclude that it came from an intelligent source. Why then doesn't the vast information sequence in the DNA molecule of just a bacterium also imply an intelligent source? Which evolved first and how long did it work without the others, the bones, ligaments, tendons, blood supply, or muscles to move the bones? If any of the thousands of vital organs evolved, how could the organism live before getting the vital organ? Without a vital organ, the organism is dead by definition. What good is only half a heart, or one-third of a liver, or one-fourth of a brain? Not only that, but all the organs have to be there fully functioning altogether, or you're dead. They can't evolve. If it takes intelligence to make an arrowhead, then why doesn't it take vastly more intelligence to create a human to make the arrowhead in the first place? And do you really believe that hydrogen will turn into people if you wait long enough? Somebody's got a gas problem. When, where, why, and how did man evolve feelings? Love, mercy, guilt, etc. would never evolve in the theory of evolution. You're too busy trying to be the strongest and fittest to survive, not be nice. How did photosynthesis evolve? And how did flowering plants evolve and from what? Do people accept evolution because of the following factors? It's all they've been taught. They like the freedom from God and no moral absolutes, etc. They are bound to support the theory for fear of losing their job or status or grade point average. They are too proud to admit they are wrong. Evolution is the only philosophy that can be used to justify their political agenda. Do you honestly believe that everything came from nothing, and do your answers show more or less faith than the person who says, God must have created life? And what are you risking if you are wrong? If we are not supposed to teach religion in schools, then why not get evolution out of the textbooks? It too is a religious worldview that requires even more faith than a biblical creationist. And apparently, it was this logic that drove F. Salisbury to write in the Journal of American Biology Teacher this profound statement: it is as though everything must happen at once. The entire system must come into being as one unit, or it is worthless.
The logic of design. Evolutionists believe that since they can understand the working of the universe and the inner makings of living organisms, that this somehow enables them to prove that life was not designed, but merely created by chance. But the logical question is, just because you understand how something works, doesn't mean it wasn't designed. For example, just because we can explain the operation of a complex machine, such as a watch or a car, in purely naturalistic terms, does not explain the origin of the watch or car. Watches or cars do not build themselves. They are designed. And we do not need to personally see the designer of the watch or car to believe that the designer exists. For instance, if I see a painting, it implies a painter even though I do not see the painter. Or if I see a building, it implies a builder. Or if I see a watch, it implies a watchmaker. Or if I see, let alone drive a car, it implies a carmaker, even though I may never see them. It surely didn't create itself from an explosion in a junkyard. Somebody had to design these things and put them all together. That's common sense. And so it is with the complex living systems in the world today. We are quite capable understanding them as far as how they are designed and operate, but this has nothing to do with how they originated. Logic tells us that if something shows complex design, like a watch or car, or a painting or a building, then there must also be a complex watchmaker, a complex carmaker, a complex painter, a complex builder, i.e. a complex designer who put it all together. And apparently, it was this logic that drove British physicist Sir James Jeans to make this astonishing observation. Nature seems very conversant with the rules of pure mathematics. In the same way, a scientific study of the action of the universe has suggested a conclusion, which may be summed up in the statement that the universe appears to have been designed by a pure mathematician. The universe can be best pictured, although still very imperfectly and inadequately, as consisting of pure thought. If the universe is a universe of thought, then its creation must have been an act of thought. Indeed, the finiteness of time and space almost compels us, of ourselves, to picture the creation as an act of thought. Modern scientific theory compels us to think of the Creator as working outside time and space, which are part of his creation, just as the artist is outside his canvas.
The logic of percentages. Evolutionists believe that organisms evolved by slow, gradual changes over time. Or in other words, a partial percentage of some limb here slowly over time gaining some other percentage of change over there, etc. But the logical question is, what good is a partial percentage of anything, especially when it's needed to sustain life? For instance, how about a car? Let's suppose your son turns 16 and says he wants to borrow the keys to the car and you say, well son listen, a car is a complex machine. Your mom and I have been praying about this. We don't think you fully understand how complex the car is son, so we decided we are going to let you slowly evolve into the car. This year we are going to give you 10% of the car and next year maybe a little bit more. The obvious point as any teenager will tell you is, what good is 10% of a car? That's what you put in a junkyard, isn't it? Therefore, what good is 10% of an eyeball, or a wing, or a feather, or a beak, or any complex structure such as evolution proposes as the basis for how life originated?
The logic of the bee. Evolutionists believe that all of life evolved purely by chance with no outside help, including a tiny little seemingly simple honeybee. Well, let's observe this belief logically by comparing the tiny little brain of a honeybee to NASA's huge Cray computer, the YMPC-90, which by the way was built and designed by a team of engineers. First, there's the size. The Cray computer is huge while the honeybee's brain is obviously tiny by comparison. Next, there's the speed. The Cray computer can process 6 billion calculations per second, and granted that's pretty fast. But the brain of a honeybee can do about 1,000 billion per second, which means that its brain is about 166 times faster than a Cray computer. Then there's the energy consumption. The Cray uses many kilowatts, but the honeybee only uses 10 microwatts. That's pretty efficient, wouldn't you say? In fact, honeybees not only make honey, they fly on honey. That's their energy source. And a honeybee can fly a million miles on 1 gallon of honey. Let's see you invent a machine that gets a million miles per gallon. Our Heavenly Father did. He's pretty smart, isn't he? Next, we have the cost. The Cray computer costs $48 million, but the honeybee's brain is pretty cheap. We splat them on our windshields all the time. Then we have the maintenance issue. Many people have to scramble when the Cray breaks down, but nobody fixes the honeybee's brain. He heals himself. Let's see you invent a computer that fixes its own problems and replaces its own hard drive when it needs it. Pretty amazing, isn't it? Then we have the weight. Obviously, the honeybee doesn't weigh much, and thus its brain weighs even less. But the Cray computer weighs 2,300 pounds. So what's the logical conclusion of this comparison? The Cray computer is huge, it's slow, it's inefficient, it costs a lot of money, you have to babysit the dumb thing, and it was designed. There isn't anybody with half a brain that would say, the Cray computer came from an explosion in an electronics factory, would they? And yet we have the honeybee's brain, which is faster, more efficient, energy efficient, cheap, and evolutionists say it evolved. I don't think so. Logic reveals that it too, like the Cray computer, had to be designed. You don't need to be a genius to figure that out.
The logic of the brain. Now let's continue to follow the logic of the designed brain of the honeybees to the designed brain of a person. The human brain is millions of times more complex than a honeybee's. In fact, one person could walk into a room and look around that room, and in 1 second their brain would pick up enough information to keep the Cray computer busy for 1,000 years. The human brain is not only amazing, it's unbelievably complex. And by the way, it's the same brain you're using right now to read this and apply common sense logic with. And speaking of applying common sense logic with our brains, If the human brain is nothing but 3 pounds of chemicals that got together by chance over billions of years, like the evolutionists teach, then how can an evolutionist trust their own thinking process? If evolution is true, you could not know that it's true because your brain is nothing but chemicals. Think about that one.
The logic of Mount Rushmore. And finally, let's apply some logical questions to the formation of the world's largest rock group, Mount Rushmore. Ask any evolutionist these logical questions. Do you believe that there is any way these faces of Washington, Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Lincoln could have appeared on this rock by chance? Or do you think the wind did that? Or do you think erosion did it? Or how about exfoliation? Or what about thermal expansion of rock? If you ask them what caused those faces to appear on Mount Rushmore, they would obviously say that they were designed by someone. And of course they were, by an artist named Gutzon Borglum. But then ask them this question. Do you believe the men represented here happened by chance? If they believe in evolution, they have to say yes. And then say, now, wait a minute. You don't think that their face could appear on a rock by chance, but you do think that their whole complex anatomy, with 50 trillion cells, could happen by chance. And then ask them, how many years would it take for these figures to appear on the side of this mountain by chance? Millions of years. Billions of years. Given 100 trillion years, could these figures eventually form on the side of the mountain? Obviously, the evolutionist would say it's impossible no matter how much time you give it. But then ask them, but isn't that how you say we got here after billions of years of chance, even though we're incredibly more complex than the faces on Mount Rushmore? The logical conclusion is that just the faces on Mount Rushmore had to be designed. How much more then was the human body designed? Therefore, isn't it possible that evolutionists have made things so mindlessly complicated that they fail to see the obvious? I think so, too. And speaking of mindlessness, while evolutionists will refrain from saying that the faces carved on the rock of Mount Rushmore happened by chance, they really do believe we all came from a rock. Don't believe me? Then listen to this man's encounter, with some of them admitting this very fact. I was speaking in a college in Boston one time, and this preacher called all the college and universities around Boston for a debate with me. So when I got there, I got my charts out, and I said, "Now, folks, I believe the Bible." Nobody cheered. I said, "I believe about 6,000 years ago God made everything. The world's not millions of years old. And 2,000 years ago Jesus came." And I gave them the basic Bible story. Then I told them what they believe, because most of them don't know what they believe, you have to tell them. I said, "You guys believe that 20 billion years ago there was a big bang where nothing exploded and produced everything. Then you say 4.6 billion years ago the earth cooled down, made a hard rocky crust, it rained on the rocks for millions of years, turned them into soup, and the soup came alive 3 billion years ago. And this early life form found somebody to marry. Boy, not that's a good trick." And I continued, "Then it found something to eat, of course, and then slowly evolved into everything we see today." One professor was kind of getting upset at about this time. I seemed to do that to them. He said, "There are hundreds of varieties of dogs in the world." I said, "Yes, sir, you're right about that." He said, "You mean to tell me that you believe that all these dogs came from two dogs off of Noah's Ark? You expect me to believe that?" I said, "Sir, would you look at what you're teaching your students? You're teaching your students that all the dogs in the world came from a rock." Then I had one lady come to me after a debate one time. She was steaming down the aisle. Boy, she was mad. She walked up and said, "Tonight, you said we believe that we came from a rock. We do not believe that." I said, "Well, ma'am, calm down for just a minute. Do you believe in evolution?" She said, "Yes, I do. I'm a professor here at the university. I said, "Well, will you please tell me then where we came from?" She said, "We came from a macromolecule." I said, "Where did that come from?" She said, "From the oceans. From the prebiotic soup." I said, "Where did that come from?" She said, "Well, it rained on the rocks for millions of years." And then she paused, and you could see that it was slowly dawning on her that, "I really do believe that I came from a rock, don't I?" I replied, "Yes, ma'am, you do. You ought to be proud of it. But be careful not to step on Grandpa, whatever you do."
Now, folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say looking at some common sense logic clearly shows that life not only was but had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent creator. How about you? In fact, I'd say anybody who says they weren't, they're acting like they're a few fries short of a happy meal, you know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, I guess that's why John O'Keefe, astronomer at NASA, said,
"We are, by astronomical standards, a pampered, cosset, cherished group of creatures. If the universe had not been made with the most exacting precision, we could never have come into existence. It is my view that these circumstances indicate the universe was created for man to live in."
And I guess that's why Vera Kistiakovsky, MIT physicist, said,
"The exquisite order displayed by our scientific understanding of the physical world calls for the divine."
Crone translation? If you think all of life, after looking at some common sense logic, was created by chance, you're acting like you're a few fries short of a happy meal. Right? Isn't that what they're saying? Of course they are. Why? Because any intelligent person knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say that when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, great answer, you're so intelligent. Oh, but that's not all. The 10th evidence of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world is the evidence of the odds. People of God, just in case common sense logic isn't enough to dispel the myth that a person who believes in intelligent design is somehow checking in their brains at the door, let's continue to come and reason together like God said to, and now logically observe whether or not the odds will even allow evolution to occur in the first place.
The odds of chance. Using our reason or logic to disprove evolution is one thing. But it's even more embarrassing for the evolutionist when you apply the laws of probability or odds. You see, when you ask the evolutionist as to why we do not observe evolution taking place today, they will reply that it only occurs long ago and far away, which, by the way, sounds like a fairy tale to me. Or in other words, they say that given enough time and chance, then evolution is bound to take place. Well, let's just stop and think about that statement for a minute. As we've already seen, it doesn't matter how much time you allow, be it millions or billions of years, evolution, as described, will logically never take place. But let's take a look at their second prescription, chance. What is chance? Can it create anything? Does it have creative powers? No. It's merely an adjective to describe a mathematical probability. Chance is nothing and it creates nothing. Yet somehow we are to believe that time and chance created everything. I don't think so. And if you stop and think about it, the evolutionist saying that chance created everything is not only idiotic, it's downright ironic, especially when you realize how the true definition of chance, a mathematical probability, actually disproves evolution. Let me show you what I mean using this person's analogy. For instance, it is obvious that a person using their intelligence could arrange a row of 100 pennies on the floor with all heads facing up. But could a person accomplish the same feat by throwing the 100 pennies into the air, and all of them land with their heads facing up? Well, to answer that, we need to calculate the probability, or the odds of this kind of event happening by chance. When flipping pennies, there is a 1 in 2 or a 50/50 chance of getting a head on each attempt. So to find the odds of getting an unbroken series of heads in a row, you multiply the probability of each individual flip. Thus, the chance of getting 7 heads in succession is 1 in 2 to the 7th power, or 1 in 128. This means that you would have to flip 7 pennies 128 times before you could expect to get 7 heads in a row. However, the odds of getting 100 heads in succession is 1 in 2 to the 100th power, or about 1 in 10 to the 30th power, the number 1 with 30 zeros after it. Thus, even if you could flip 10,000 pennies per second,
You would have to continue flipping at that incredible speed every second of every day for about 3,150 quadrillion years before you could reasonably expect to get 100 heads in succession without error. Now, since the maximum age of the universe according to evolutionists is only 20 billion years, you would run out of time before you could even come close to accomplishing the task. Therefore, you can safely and reasonably say, no, it is not possible to randomly throw 100 pennies into the air and all of them land heads up without helping them, or in other words, using your intelligence. In fact, this example brings us to the next reasonable question of, when then are the odds of a chance event considered impossible? Well, believe it or not, a famous mathematician named Émile Borel examined this question and formulated what he called the law of chance. He said, events whose probabilities are extremely small never occur. We may be led to set at 1 in 10 to the 50th power the value of negligible probabilities on the cosmic scale. When the probability of an event is below this limit, the opposite event, the failure of the desired event, may be expected to occur with certainty. This is like asking you what the probability is of someone throwing a baseball from the Earth to the Moon. You would rightly and reasonably conclude that it would and could never happen. It is utterly impossible. Yet, a probability mathematician might say that the probability is less than 1 chance in 10 to the 50th power. What is important to note is that they are not saying it could or ever would happen, but rather it's just their mathematical way of describing an impossible event. And this is precisely where the evolutionists blur the lines of reason. They put huge mathematical numbers on the odds of life spontaneously creating itself, and somehow these odds show that it can be done. Yet, any probability greater than 1 chance in 10 to the 50th power is mathematically impossible. Meaning that if it were to occur with those chances, or odds, it would be considered an outright miracle, like throwing a baseball from the Earth to the Moon, which is something they deny.
The odds of a single protein. So now that we know the threshold of an event being mathematically impossible, let's take a look at the odds of a single protein ever coming into being. World-famous astronomer Sir Frederick Hoyle decided to calculate the probability of a single bacterium coming into existence by chance from some sort of primordial soup. Prior to this project, Hoyle was a firm believer in the spontaneous generation of life, but after this project, he changed his opinion 180 degrees. Using the laws of chemistry, probability, thermodynamics, and a computer, he calculated that the probability of the spontaneous generation of just the proteins of a single amoeba was 1 chance in 10 to the 40,000th power. That's a 1 with 40,000 zeros after it. Remember, any probability greater than 1 chance in 10 to the 50th power is mathematically impossible, that is, it can never occur. And just to give you an idea of how big of a number 10 to the 40,000th power is, the number of atoms in the entire universe is estimated to be about 10 to the 87th power. Therefore, thinking that just even the proteins of a single amoeba, let alone the amoeba itself spontaneously generating itself, is absolutely ridiculous. In fact, it has been said that this kind of thinking is about as reasonable as if you were to say that given enough time and chance that a Scrabble factory could explode enough times, until the letters eventually land to perfectly spell out the book War and Peace. Or that a tornado can whip through a junkyard leaving behind a perfectly formed Boeing 747. In fact, if you do the math, the odds of a person winning a state lottery every single week of their life from age 18 to age 99 is more likely than the spontaneous generation of just the proteins of a single amoeba. And that's why after Sir Frederick Hoyle concluded his research, he stated that the likelihood of the formation of life from inanimate matter is 1 to a number with 40,000 knots after it. It is enough to bury Darwin and the whole theory of evolution. There was no primeval soup neither on this planet nor on any other, and if the beginnings of life were not random, they must therefore have been the product of purposeful intelligence.
The odds of a single DNA. As you can see, Hoyle's calculations are absolutely incredible. But remember, these are just the odds of the so-called spontaneous generation of just proteins. Now let's take a look at the odds of a single DNA molecule randomly coming into existence. As we've seen before, DNA is the most complex molecule in the universe, If you typed out its code, you would find it is more complex and contains more information than all of the computer programs ever written by man combined, and when you got done typing, you would have enough books to fill the Grand Canyon 40 times. But that's not all going on here. Now take that 40 Grand Canyons full of books and condense it to software, and when you get done, it has to fit inside 2 tablespoons with the ability to reproduce itself. So what are the chances or odds of a single DNA molecule coming to life? Well, believe it or not, it has been calculated to be 1 in 10 to the 119,000th power. That's almost 3 times as big of a number as the odds just the proteins of a single amoebae. Don't forget that the number of atoms in the entire universe is estimated to be about 10 to the 87th power, and anything beyond 10 to the 50th power is mathematically impossible. Also keep in mind that the DNA molecule is logically sequenced. There is nothing random about it, which has led R.L. Wissong to conclude this. This means 1,189,190 DNA molecules, on the average, must form to provide the one chance of forming the specific DNA sequence necessary to code the 124 proteins. 1,089,190 DNAs would weigh 1,089,147 times more than the Earth, and would certainly be sufficient to fill the universe many times over. It is estimated that the total amount of DNA necessary to code 100 billion people could be contained in half of an aspirin tablet. Surely 1,089,147 times the weight of the Earth in DNAs is a stupendous amount and emphasizes how remote the chance is to form the one DNA molecule. A quantity of DNA this colossal could never have formed. As one person put it, the possibility that a pile of sand or a mud puddle could make any living creature is totally remote. It just could not happen. The truth is that something totally impossible can never happen. If I throw a book into the air, it will never change into a live pigeon, never. The evolutionary error is that, if something is totally impossible, it will eventually happen, if given enough time. Accepting such an error is self-deception in the extreme.
The odds of a single bacteria. Once again, now that we know the threshold of an event being mathematically impossible, that of 1 in 10 to the 50th power, let's now take a look at the odds of a single bacteria randomly coming into existence. So far we've seen the odds of the so-called spontaneous generation of just proteins or DNA. But this does not take into consideration the so-called chance formation of the DNA with the RNA or the cell wall that holds the contents of the cell together. Well, believe it or not, a Yale University physicist named Harold Moravitz has calculated the odds of this for us. He demonstrated that the chances of a single bacteria somehow coming to life is 1 in 10 100 billionth power. Remember, any probability greater than 1 chance in 10 to the 50th power is mathematically impossible, and there are an estimated 10 to the 87th power of atoms in the entire universe. The facts are that this number, 1 in 10 to the 100 billionth power, is so large that it would require several 100,000 blank books just to write the zeros of that number out. And not just you, but you and your entire extended family are more likely to win the lottery every week for 100 years than it is for a single bacteria to form by chance. And keep in mind that our bodies have an estimated 50 trillion cells which all have to be in existence all at the same time, and all have to work properly all at the same time in order for life to function. And this is just one human body. Keep in mind that if you want to procreate, then you need 2 of them at the same time, 1 male and 1 female, and they have to be interested in each other. Again, it's hard enough just to get married. And what about the rest of life on the planet? And it was these mind-boggling odds that led Robert Cheaper to conclude. The improbability involved in generating even one bacterium is so large that it reduces all considerations of time and space to nothingness. Given such odds, the time until the black holes evaporate and the space to the ends of the universe would make no difference at all. If we were to wait, we would be truly be waiting for a miracle.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say that the odds clearly show that life not only was but we had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent creator. How about you? In fact, I'd say anybody who says they weren't, they're acting like they're not the sharpest knife in the drawer, you know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, apparently that's why Fred Hoyle, British astrophysicist, said.
A common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a superintellect has monkeyed with physics, as well as with chemistry and biology, and that there are no blind forces worth speaking about in nature. The numbers one calculates from the facts seem to me so overwhelming as to put this conclusion almost beyond question.
Own translation? If you think all of life, after looking at the odds, was created by chance, then you're acting like you're not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Right? Isn't that what he's saying? Of course he is. Why? Because any intelligent person knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say that when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, great answer, you're so intelligent. Oh, but that's not all. The 11th evidence of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world is the evidence from science. People, we're going to take a look at the hardcore facts of science, and you tell me with your own brain if there's any way life ever could, let alone did evolve. Not only that, we're going to take a look at the real reason why evolutionists will defy logic, reason, and yes, even science, just to keep them from having to admit that God is the one who created life and that evolution is totally bankrupt. You won't believe your ears. But we'll take a look at that in the next chapter.